This is my second time to be here in a couple of years. The last time I was here, I showed up with a PowerPoint presentation, and we talked about the importance of voting, and we're going to talk about that today. I promise I'll be done a few minutes before one, but I'm honored to be here. You might be asking, who is that bearded man? He looks so different from that nice picture that we received on the flyer. The beard kind of gets away from you after a while. It's just one of those things where I wake up and it's just that much longer every day. So I wasn't able to get to the barber yesterday, but I apologize for that. Let me just tell you a little bit about myself. I want you to know my background just a tad bit, because I think it reflects on my message to you today, which is to be engaged and vigilant in our community. My great-grandfather served as a Caddo District Court judge in 1906. He served from 1906 to 1910. Started out more than 100 years ago. My mother was from Shreveport. She married a guy from Minden, my father, and I grew up in Minden. They lived in Minden. My father ran a hardware store in the city of Minden. And as a young teenager in the 1960s, you might wonder, well, what do teenagers in Minden do? Well, I can tell you what we thought about doing all the time, which was coming to Shreveport. You know, what I wanted to do more than anything else as a young 15-year-old who had recently gotten his driver's license was drive to Shreveport, because after all there were plenty of 15-year-old girls and 16-year-old girls, and that's what I was really kind of thinking about back in the 60s, and so I couldn't wait to get to Shreveport any chance I got. And I developed a lot of friends here. I thereafter went to LSU undergrad and then LSU law school, graduating in 1980, and the only place that I interviewed for jobs was, guess where? Shreveport. And Minden, actually. I went so far as 30 miles to our east, and I did interview at a couple of firms in Minden, but my father advised me to go with Shreveport, because he said I would get more experience in Shreveport in a law firm or in the DA's office. So I interviewed with the Caddo District Attorney's Office, and I was honored and blessed enough to be hired by District Attorney Paul Carmouche in 1980. My very first case was a traffic case. He trusted me with a traffic case, which was a failure to yield. It wasn't a very serious traffic case, but I'm proud to report that in 1980 I won that case, and there was a finding of guilty as charged by the judge, and I was very proud of myself. The very last case that I prosecuted was a serial killer, Nathaniel Code, in 1990. Throughout the 80s, over a 3 or 4 year period, Nathaniel Code systematically and methodically killed people in the Cedar Grove area of Shreveport. He terrorized Cedar Grove. The Shreveport Police Department spent untold hundreds and hundreds and thousands of hours working on the Nathaniel Code case. They didn't know when he would strike next. Nathaniel Code killed people between ages 8 and 72. He did not discriminate based on age. He killed men, women, and children. And at his very last murder was a triple homicide in 1987, and the police focused on him, caught him. He was arrested in custody. And then in 1990, after numerous pretrial hearings and according him all the due process that he was entitled to, we had a trial, a 23-day trial, with a finding of guilt, and thereafter a recommendation by the jury of the death penalty. I was fortunate enough to have the honor to prosecute that very bad guy, and standing before a jury in 1990 at the young age of 36, I asked the jury to impose the death penalty. And they did. That case was one that warranted the death penalty, and it was quite an experience to stand before a jury. First of all, to be the lead prosecutor in a case of that magnitude. This was a circumstantial evidence case. It was one where, after you put all the pieces of the puzzle together, there was a clear and distinct picture of the man who committed these dastardly crimes. But it was not an easy case. It was a circumstantial evidence case. It was no witness, no eyewitness of any sort. And it was just a lot of indirect evidence. When it all stacked up and when it all added together, there was no doubt about who committed these terrible crimes. And, of course, when he was arrested, the crime stopped. Now, I was also fortunate, and of course, between that first traffic case, failure to yield, and that serial killer prosecution, I prosecuted probably, certainly hundreds and hundreds of violent felony cases. During the time I was a prosecutor, my father here in Shreveport was armed robbed. It was a home invasion. He's from Minden. My mother had died years previous, and he had a date with this young lady about his age, 72. They'd gone out to eat, and went dancing at the riverfront. They came home. Apparently, someone at the riverfront followed them, and it was a home invasion. He was hogtied in this lady's house, gun pointed to his head, arm robbed, and let's fast forward to just a couple of months ago. My son, a senior at Centenary, living on East Wilkinson Street, right across from Marjorie Lyons Playhouse, arm robbed when he and his girlfriend came back from dinner one weeknight. A man met them in his driveway, just about 100 yards from the Marjorie Lyons Playhouse at Centenary, pointed a gun to his head and arm robbed him of his wallet and watch and valuables, and arm robbed her of her purse and valuables. This crime is amongst us, and we have to be vigilant about that. We have to be watchful. We have to be on alert, and we have to do everything we can to try to stop this cycle of violent crime. But when you think about it, the police officers were given their report, it just reminded me that in my immediate family, my father, arm robbed, tied up, arm robbed, in a home invasion. Thank God he wasn't killed. Thank God his lady friend was not killed. But they could have been, because guns were pointed to their heads. Thank God my son wasn't killed. He could have been. There was a gun pointed to his head just this past November. One family, two victims of a violent felony crime. You can't imagine how I might feel about violent crime. I've always felt the same about violent crime. I think it's what brought me to the DA's office in 1980. It's what I'm mindful of as I preside over a criminal case in Caddo District Court. Getting back to my story, in 1990 I was elected to the district court bench. There was a primary in November of 1990. I was age 36. The problem is I looked like I was 14. And when I went from house to house, door to door, the first question asked of me, and this was a question asked about 100 times every single day, was, how old are you? And I would say, well, I'm 36, but let me tell you what I've done, and let me tell you what my vision is, and let me tell you a little bit about my philosophy. But I had to overcome this youthful look, which is both a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing, I guess, if you're age, I'll be 56 this year. I guess it's a blessing in some respects. But if you do what I do, it's everybody's looking for somebody older and that looks older. I'm older, but I may not look older, but I got this gray beard, which may help me. But my wife, if my wife has her way, the beard will go very soon. But this was, when I was elected, it was a low turnout on the November primary. Was a busy election season, and I was out of a 4-man race. I was the top vote getter. I got about 43%, and then the guy who came in second, who was a very capable lawyer, Charles Grubb, who's now parish attorney, he came in at about 37%, and then the other two came in much lower, of course. And then in the runoff, it was Charles Grubb and me in the 1990 election, and we were both, I think he's very qualified and he's a very good man, but it was a low voter turnout. Now, it could be that the voting public thought, well, they're both good guys. I'm just going to sit this one out. It's hunting season. I've got other things to do. Honeydew's at home. Christmas is coming up. Again, this is a December election. It was a low turnout. I won by about 57%. And I guess the sadness of it is that a very qualified candidate, my opponent, never became judge. He had served as city attorney for the city of Shreveport previously. He's now our parish attorney, and he's a good guy. But one of us had to win, and one of us had to lose. And I was sworn in January 1 of 1991. I've served about half my time on the civil bench and about half my time on the criminal bench. And along about the 16th year of my judgeship, I was in criminal court, presiding in criminal court, and it was one of those days where it just seemed to be an inordinate number of young people who were before me charged with very, very serious crimes, crimes such as armed robbery, drive-by shooting, second-degree murder. I'm talking about 15-year-olds. The law is that if one is 15 years old and he commits a certain violent felony, he does not go to juvenile court. He goes to Caddo District Court. He is prosecuted as an adult. He is, if he's convicted, he's punished as an adult. He can go to Angola as a 15-year-old. He goes to the Department of Corrections if he is convicted. And this day, there seem to be at least half a dozen, which of course would be half a dozen too many, but there at least was a half a dozen, maybe as many as 10 young people charged with violent crimes. And the deputy clerk of court, who was there to maintain all the records and record all the proceedings, she turned to me and she said, "Judge," and she must have read the exasperation look on my face, maybe the bewilderment on my face, and she said, "Judge, they just don't know." And it was at that moment in time when it was kind of like a light bulb. It's sort of like words in my head were saying, someone needs to tell them. And someone needs to educate them. And by that, you know, and by this term of they just don't know, by this point that she made, this deputy clerk of court was saying, Judge, they have no idea about the consequences of that which they do. And by me having this series of thoughts, well, you know what? I'm going to do everything I can in my off time to try to educate them. And so that was somewhat of an epiphany, I guess, but it certainly led to this PowerPoint program that I started, which is titled "Don't Let This Be You," and basically this program is designed for teenagers and their parents, because I want the parents to be there so that they can have a discussion with their children later. Let me digress for a moment, and there are handouts on your table. Again, I apologize for no PowerPoint this time. Next time I'll be more prepared. But let me digress for a moment and couple this discussion regarding these young offenders in my courtroom with Louisiana's incarceration rate. Number one, it's on page one of the materials, and this is staggering. This is a stunning statistic for our state. Louisiana's incarceration rate is number one in the nation per capita. We are number one in something. Number two, one out of every 55 Louisiana residents is behind bars. Number three, one in 26 Louisiana adults is under correctional control, meaning that they're either in custody with the Department of Corrections or they're under supervision by the Department of Probation and Parole or on parole with that department. That's a huge number, huge number. Fourth, it costs the state $39.75 to keep an offender behind bars for one day, for just one day. That amounts to $14,508.75 per year. Incarceration costs us $653 million in 2007 and 2008, for the 2007-2008 year. That was a 12-month period starting in 2007, ending in 2008. Now, what does all this tell us? Well, it tells us a lot of things, of course. Number one is that the judges are doing their jobs insofar as putting offenders behind bars. The DAs across the state are doing their jobs in terms of prosecuting those that are arrested by the city police departments and the parish sheriff's office. And, of course, the parish sheriff's offices and the police departments across the state are doing an excellent job of catching people and arresting those that are committing felony crimes. DAs are doing their jobs. Judges are doing their jobs. And the end result is what? Well, our incarceration rate is number one in the nation, and it costs us money. I want any violent offender, remember, please, I was a prosecutor for 10 years. I prosecuted violent felony crime. That was my passion. Now my passion is doing justice. My view on justice of those who commit violent crimes is that they need to go to the Department of Corrections if they're guilty. And I have sentenced people to life imprisonment more times than I can count. more times as a judge over the last 19 full years, more times than I can count, I have sentenced people of all ages to life imprisonment. And I believe in that. For the violent offender, they need to go. But these statistics are staggering because we lead the nation in incarceration. I don't know if we want to be number one on that. Secondly, I don't know if we want to pay for that. What amount of tax dollars does it cost us, that is everybody in this room, to incarcerate people? We've got, as judges, I need to be picky about who I put in jail. Again, I carry with me a tough law and order philosophy. I always had that. I had that before law school. I had that during law school. That's what led to my choice of work before being a judge. That's what I got elected on, and that's what I carry with me today. I haven't changed, but I'm just suggesting that this is a very expensive proposition to incarcerate the high number of people that we do, and what can we do about it? What can we do about it? Well, go back to that day when the deputy clerk is saying to me, "Judge, I just don't know." And this calling, and I believe it to be divine, this calling to design a PowerPoint program to educate them so that they can't say they just don't know. No longer, I don't want to hear that. I did not know, Judge. Well, the fact of the matter is, a principle to a crime is very broad. In the state of Louisiana, we have two types of parties to a crime. One is principals, one is accessory after the fact. And all the police officers and law enforcement officers know this. But if you are involved in the commission of a crime, whether present or absent, if you're involved in any way, shape, or form, you're a principal to that crime. For example, a getaway driver in an armed robbery, a getaway driver in a burglary, a lookout person, a driver for a drive-by shooting. It's kind of hard to do a drive-by shooting these days or any time if you don't have a driver. You have to have a driver. So that driver is equally as guilty as the one who actually fires the bullets. And so this concept of this legal concept of principles is a very important concept. The business of illegal drugs is prevalent throughout our schools and throughout our young people using illegal drugs, and these drugs are dangerous. Cocaine and powder cocaine, and not only the illegality but the health consequences are scary. Methamphetamine is out there. What that does to you is it can shut down your organs and you can die from it. Your teeth will rot, among other things, because of what it does to your natural enzymes in your mouth. And so those that are methamphetamine addicts, they normally have teeth that are rotting. And these young people need to know about the health consequences and about the illegality. These are felony crimes, as they ought to be. I even include texting while driving. I include seat belts. You know, I've had so many cases where young people that don't wear seat belts are involved in wrecks and they end up quadriplegic or dead. Texting while driving. My younger son just drove back to Wake Forest in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, where he's a senior, and I called him about three times and I said, you know, thank God for cell phones, but I said, just think of me, I'm in your rearview mirror, and what am I telling you? He said, "Dad, I can see you in my rearview mirror right now. And you're telling me, make sure that seatbelt is on, and you're telling me to get off the cell phone, so I've got to say goodbye. You're telling me not to text while driving." And I said, "Good, I've done a good job. Thank you. I'll call you in 2 hours." You know, I also tell these young people about sexting. That's texting with an S. These young people, it's amazing to me the amount of what we now know is what we now refer to as sexting, that is taking a picture of one another, maybe taking a picture of oneself, or maybe taking a picture of someone else that's not an appropriate picture and transmitting it, and it goes into cyberspace. And once you get it out there, you can't get it back. Well, depending on who the subject is, it could be a felony. It could be a felony crime of obscenity. Or it could be indecent behavior with a juvenile if that subject of that picture is underaged. And these young people need to know about that. They need to know about carnal knowledge of a juvenile, which is consensual sexual intercourse where the difference in age is greater than 2 years. It is a crime. It is a crime. We're not talking about rape. We're talking about consensual sexual intercourse. And if we think that they're not engaged in sexual intercourse, consensual sexual intercourse, we're kidding ourselves. They are. They're involved in sexual activity. We need to face that, and we need to address that in a very healthy way. And my job is not to talk about, I don't talk about birth control. That's a matter of parent and child. But I do talk about the legal issues involved in this type of behavior. I also talk about paternity. You know, I will say to a group of high school students, you know what? If you're man enough to father a child, you're man enough to pay for that child. And all that young lady has to do is go to the courthouse, fill out a one-sheet piece of paper, and it's deemed to be a paternity suit, and you will be served with that, and you will have to give a you can either admit or deny you're the father. If you deny it, we'll have a DNA test, and we'll find out for sure. And if you're the father, we will then assign, we will set child support, and we will garnish your wages until that child is 18 years old. And at that point, when I'm talking about a wage assignment order or a garnishment of wages, they really start paying attention. The last time I spoke about this subject was at Byrd High School. And when I started talking about when you're man enough to father a child, you better be man enough to pay for that child, I got a round of applause from the students, mostly the female students. But all I say all this and more in about a 75-minute PowerPoint presentation, and I've done this now more than 100 times. And you'll see on page 2, 3, and 4 a little bit about the program. And if your child is in a high school, my group, that is my partners and I, will go to that school and we'll talk about this PowerPoint. We'll talk about all these concepts, and it's all PowerPoint, and we'll have questions from the audience, and I think it's a very informative opportunity. The last time we spoke was at Byrd High, and there was a little bit of a there was some press there, and it ended up with a pretty good news article about it, as well as an editorial in the Shreveport Times about it, and that's on page 4 of your handout. Well, you know, during the last year, I started wondering, well, is this enough? Of course, keep in mind, I have a day job, and that is a docket at Caddo District Court, and the dockets are voluminous, and I put my heart and soul into every day, every day is a race against the clock. I want to do as much as I can do before I have to go home. Okay, I love going home, and I love my wife, but there's just so much to do that we never quite catch up, and I can honestly say, in 19 years, I've never caught up. I've never had that day where my desk is clear, I've got nothing whatsoever to do, and I'm going to go home early. That's never happened in 19 full years, this being my 20th year. But in terms of this community service question, I asked myself, is this enough? We have done this Don't Let This Be You program probably 150 times, certainly well more than 100 times at high schools. I also do it at Caddo Correctional Center for parents and teenagers. In the media room at Caddo Correctional Center, and that part of the program is a double feature. It's PowerPoint for 75 minutes, questions for about 15 or 20, and then the teenagers and parents actually go see the pods at Caddo Correctional Center. Steve Prater and I have worked together on this, and it's nothing like a testimonial from an inmate to a young 15-year-old saying, "Don't be like me. I have screwed my life up. Don't be like me." That is a powerful message to a young person. But I ask myself still, is this enough? Notwithstanding my docket every day, notwithstanding the fact that I love doing this Don't Let This Be You program, I ask myself, is this really enough? And so I somehow received an invitation from the sheriff to come talk to the inmates at Caddo Correctional Center. They have Steve Prater is the most innovative sheriff on the planet. He is working all the time. There is not a minute he's not thinking about how to better improve the Caddo Sheriff's Office for this community. We should be so proud of him. Well, one of his many, many things that he's doing is that he has this reentry program at Caddo Correctional Center, and this is designed for the nonviolent offender. We're not talking about the armed robbers. We're not talking about the drive-by shooters or the murderers or the rapists. They go to the Department of Corrections at Angola. We're talking about the burglars, we're talking about the drug users, we're talking about even the drug distributors who have DOC time but have not yet been transferred to the Department of Corrections, because Department of Corrections is overcrowded. And you might be able to infer that from the incarceration rates. They're jammed. And so there are a lot of state DOC inmates at Caddo Correctional Center awaiting transfer at any given time. Well, I was invited to speak to this reentry group, so I go in there. And I use the same partners that I have with my Don't Let This Be You program to do this new program, which we titled No More Strikes. No More Strikes. Strike one, strike two, strike three, you're out. And that's something that can be well understood by the listener. And so in September, I launched this program at Cattle Correctional Center as part of their reentry. Actually, it's their reentry program, but my little segment is the No More Strikes part of it. And I talk about the legal pitfalls for anybody who is an inmate, who is on parole. These guys are all going to get out. It's just a matter of time. They're going to get out either next month or next week or maybe 6 months from now, but they're going to get out in the foreseeable future. They are in this reentry program, and they even work outside of the Cattle Correctional Center and come back to Cattle Correctional Center. They're under supervision. They come back. They don't escape. And the sheriff receives some of that income. They're given the opportunity to hone a skill, to sharpen their abilities, and to work a little bit under some kind of like a halfway house almost, and then come back to Cattle Correctional Center. But these guys also are taking courses about job training, job skills, etiquette in going through a job interview, basically how to behave, and some basics about life. Somehow they missed it growing up. There was nobody there to teach them, perhaps, and they missed out. And that's why they're at Cattle Correctional Center. That's why they're DOC prisoners. But the recidivism rates are pretty high. And this reentry program is brand new, and I think it's the best thing that Steve Prater has recently thought of. And let me tell you, he's thought of a lot of great things. But this is I can't tell you enough about this reentry program. You can read about it on the Caddo Parish Sheriff's Office website. And I also have the No More Strikes part of it in your materials on pages 5 and 6. And I first started this in September, and we talk about the conditions of parole, so they shouldn't be surprised when their parole officer says, guess what, you violated your conditions of parole, you're going back. I tell them all about the conditions of parole that are set forth by law. I tell them about the fact that they cannot ever have a firearm, but certainly within 10 years from the expiration of their supervision date, because that is a crime for a convicted felon to have a gun anywhere in his immediate possession. And I talk about the legal aspects of that. You know, they don't like hearing that. Well, they like it and they don't like it. You know, they don't agree with it. Of course, you know, we're the ones making the laws, and that is we, the community in the state of Louisiana, make the laws through our legislators, as we all know. And it's through legislative act that this crime of possession of a firearm by a convicted felon is on the books, and it's a minimum of 10 years hard labor. I can't tell you how many times I've presided over a possession of a firearm by a convicted felon case, and it's a minimum of 10 years if they are convicted. It's a very serious crime with serious consequences, and these inmates don't know anything about it, but I tell them. And I also talk to them about the habitual offender law, the fact that on the third time, you're going to be out, and we're talking about a life imprisonment sentence. And so last week, I was talking about 50 inmates, and somehow, I now believe that the Holy Spirit was in the room, because I led into all this, and one thing led to another, and it's just me and my partners up there doing this PowerPoint presentation, and at the end of it, we received all of these testimonials from inmates, and about somewhere at least 10, between 10 and 15 inmates. I mean, I'm talking about some big guys, okay? I mean, they take me out in one blow. But some big guys standing up doing these tearful testimonials about their lives and about the fact they're not going to come, you know, that this isn't going to happen to them again, and that they now have the power of choice, and they understand that, and they won't be back. And it was testimonial after testimonial, and more tears shed than I've ever seen, other than at a funeral, perhaps. It was the most unbelievable experience for me, and all of these thank yous of we're hungry, we want hope, and we want jobs, and we want to be able to be productive members of the community. It was just this night where I came home. Both with this incredible sense of gratification and also this sense of accomplishment, and the fact that that night the presentation had made a difference. And I think it was with God's help. And I think that God was in charge, and we just struck a chord that night. And for those that were there, I'm convinced that it was a meaningful and compelling experience. Well, you might ask, well, okay, Judge Creighton, bearded man, you know, what's all this about? Well, Tom Pace suggested that I should say, well, it's all about me.com, but it's really not. It's really not all about me. It's really all about us. And I think that and my point, since the title of this program is being engaged in the community and being vigilant in our community, the point of my talk is that we all have things we can do. There are things that we can all share with the public. I'm very blessed to have had the opportunity to do what I do, and I'm most fortunate. Again, I'm a guy from Minden, okay. Driving over that Texas Street Bridge, seeing the First Methodist Church, which had a steeple back in the 1960s, you know, thinking that this is the place I want to live. I was thinking that as a little kid, and being blessed enough to realize my dream. And so, you know, the business of public service, I think, comes into the blessing that I've had to be able to be an assistant DA and be a judge for this being my 20th year. You know, it's something we can all do, in terms of contributions to worthy agencies, you know, whether it be the VOA or whether it be the Providence House or the Community Foundation or pick your charity. It has to do with not just paying money and being done, but active involvement. I mean, actually being there, and I'm guided by Scripture that says that for unto whomsoever is given of him shall be much required. For unto whomsoever is given of him shall be much required. That drives me, and I therefore find that there's not enough hours in the day to do all that I need to do to give back to the community. And I invite you all to think of ways right now, today, this week, about ways that you can give back to the community. I recognize that I'm preaching to the choir in most cases with respect to all the members of this association, because I know you are active. I know that you are passionate about this community. If you were not passionate about this community, you likely would not be here, because the whole point of this North Shreveport Business Association is commitment to the community, and I know that. But for all of us here, what we've been given, I think, is abundant. Just the fact that we live in the greatest country in the world, we need to recognize that every day when we say the Pledge of Allegiance at these meetings and at other meetings. And we need to understand the magnitude of the liberties that we enjoy as Americans. Right now, the right to assemble. You have the right to assemble. That's guaranteed to you by the United States Constitution. Right now, I have the right to express myself based on the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. And not in every country do the citizens have these rights that some of us, not us, but some in our community may take for granted. You know, of course, they you know, there's some in our community who will commit armed robberies and do things where basically they give up their liberty, you know, by choice. It's a power of choice, and that's what I try to tell them in the Don't Let This Be You program. Now, the second part, how about this business of being vigilant? When Ms. Martin called me, I'm actually a fill-in for John Fleming, and I'm probably not quite as eloquent as he is, but at somewhat late notice, I was called to be here today, and of course, I've not turned Ms. Martin down. And she said, well, what's going to be the topic of your talk? And I was actually out of town on vacation with my family, and I said, well, how about being engaged and vigilant in the community? And she said, that's great. That's what it'll be. And I'm not sure where that came from. It just sort of came out. And I know what vigilant means, but you know what? Just to be sure I know what it means, I thought I'd look it up. And what it means is being assiduous. Well, that didn't help me a whole lot. What it also means is keeping steadily on alert. What it means is being watchful against danger. It means being a faithful watchdog of the state's interest and of our community's interest. It means being a guardian, a keeper. So what does all that mean? And what am I talking about? Well, you know, what I'm talking about is being involved in the community and being vigilant. It can be with respect to jury service. Nobody wants a jury summons. It's never the right time. You know what? My policy, please don't not like me because I'm telling you this, but my policy is to not ever let anybody out of jury service unless they have a medical problem that prevents them from being available to be there. The fact that you work is a good thing. That's not a reason to get out of jury service, because if it was, we'd have a bunch of unemployed people making big decisions. In Caddo District Court, what we have is people charged with armed robbery, like my son's armed robber was never caught. But we have armed robbery cases. We have murder cases. We have very important criminal cases that are life and death cases. And we must have jurors, because jury trial is a constitutional right for that person accused of a felony. We have to have jurors who bring with them the principles that we all have here today. You know, those people that have common sense, that work for a living. So if I excuse people because you're employed, I'd end up with a bunch of unemployed people making big decisions. The same is true in civil court. I'm presently on the civil bench now. And, you know, there are sometimes multi-million dollar decisions being made in civil court. There are doctors being sued. There are businesses suing each other on contract disputes. Sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars, are at issue. And therefore, we need good, common sense citizens with conservative values and good, solid values ruling on our cases. And so therefore, if you step up and say, Judge, I want to be out of jury service because I'm employed, my answer is going to be no. If you have a serious conflict, the best I can do is I'll reschedule you. But you know what? That's one thing that you can do to be engaged and go through it. You know, it's basically a one-week commitment. In Orleans Parish, it's a 30-day commitment. So you're in a central jury pool for 30 days. Imagine that if you are busy like we all are. Another way you can be vigilant is to vote. Now, if you look at page 7, here are the elections that we have this year so far, and I received this from our registrar of voters just yesterday. We will be voting for a United States senator. You know that. We'll be voting for a United States representative. That's a two-year term, and that's a tough thing for a congressman who's a representative, because I guess he gets to relax on election night, but the following day he better get busy meeting people and raising money for the next election, because it comes up every 2 years. Our senator comes up every 6 years. We'll be voting for United States senator, and that's, of course, the Vitter-Melanson race, and perhaps anybody else who gets involved. We'll be voting for a United States representative this year. And if you see, all that's on page 7. And we'll also be voting on one, a court of appeal judge. Judges are really important. I know they don't generate much interest in the election cycle, but they are really important. You know why? Because they make decisions that impact your lives. You don't want a less than scrupulous judge on the bench. You want a judge who works hard, who has the highest level of integrity, because all of what we do is really important. Because we're making decisions that deal with life and death issues. We're making decisions that deal with hundreds of thousands of dollars potentially. And you want judges, we all need to do our homework when we vote for a judge. However, the reality is that the public really cares about a judge, or a member of the public cares about a judge, mostly when he's before that judge. But then it's too late, because that judge has that case, and it's too late to vote. You don't get to vote at that point. You perhaps had the opportunity to vote 10 years ago or so. My term is 6 years. I'm in the second year of my fourth 6-year term. So I'm not here to politic. I'm not here to ask for your vote. I'd love to have your vote in four or five years or so, but I'm here just because I want to share my sense of commitment to this community. We'll vote on Caddo School Board members. If you look on page 9, I have all the school board members listed. That's really important. Our schools and our teachers are our future. And therefore, the direction of the Caterpillar School Board is extremely important. Our city council, extremely important. I have all the council members on page 9 listed, just by way of example. There are other races at issue. And, of course, you know, the city of Shreveport will have a mayoral election this year as well. And, of course, in the city of Shreveport, it's about, according to the 2000 census, and we'll learn more about the update this year, done every 10 years, but as of the year 2000, 200,000 people in the city of Shreveport. As of the census in 2000, there were 251,879 people in Caddo Parish. In the Shreveport-Bossier metro area, it's 385,000 people. And I also have the congressional district for the U.S. representative on page 8. And then I have on pages 10 and 11, and these statistics are current as of yesterday. I went over to the Registrar of Voters during my lunch hour, talked to Ernie Robertson, and he gave me the exact numbers. He said, I don't want to do any percentages. And I said, that's okay. I can do percentages. If you look at page 10, these are the registered voters in this city of approximately 200,000 people, assuming that our population count in the city has not gone down, or the parish, actually. 43% are male, 57% are female. What does that mean? You may draw your own inferences there. These are registered voters for the parish of Caddo. Caddo Parish registered voters, a profile, white voters, 86,000, 53%, black voters, 70,000, 43%. Caddo Parish Republicans, 27% total. Caddo Parish Democrats, 52%. Democrats outnumber Republicans almost 2-1. And these are the stats. These are the numbers from Ernie Robertson as of yesterday. And then the ages of Caddo Parish voters. I asked him about that, and he did a little research. That required him to do a little bit of research. He got back with me later on towards the latter part of the day yesterday. 53% of the voters are aged 45 or above. Some of the younger people, for whatever reason, are too busy to vote. They're too busy on their cell phones. They're too busy texting each other. They're too busy doing whatever they're doing, and they vote a whole lot less than those who are aged 45 or greater. But, you know, I think probably with maturity comes the sense of responsibility, and that probably accounts for these numbers with respect to ages 45 and up being the greater block of voters. Well, my time is up. I really appreciate your kind attention. I guess my message is this: we all have the opportunity to do great things for this community. This city is where I choose to live. It's where I choose to die, and from the time that I was a little kid, it was just the place I wanted to live, and that was it. No discussion, no interview in Dallas or Baton Rouge or New Orleans. Not one interview out of any of those cities, Shreveport, and Minden, and it's just that there's something here about Shreveport that I am so passionate about. And I feel like we have such a great community, and we can make it better. I do every day. I do my best, and every day I know you do your best. And I challenge you to think about things that you can do in terms of community service, because we have a long way to go. Shreveport's a great place. Caddo Parish is a great place. It's the only place I choose to live, but we can all make it better. And I challenge you to think about that and to take action. And I want to thank you so much for listening to me over the past hour. I wanted to save some time for questions. I'll stick around for questions. If you have any now, I'll be glad to do my best to answer them.